Kira Damarang, hello and welcome to Speak My Language Disability. As we share stories from First Nations peoples who are engaging in their passions while also living with a disability. Throughout this series, you will hear inspiring stories from leaders and advocates within the community who have successfully pursued their dreams to become leaders in their chosen fields. In this episode, Kerry Lee Harding chats to James Griffiths. After becoming blind in 2005, James has become a passionate First Nations advocate for disability inclusion, serving on boards and councils. In 2020, James was named as a finalist for the National Awards for Disability Leadership. And in his free time, James enjoys spending his time on the water and within nature, where he loves to kayak and go blind fishing.
My name's James Griffiths. I'm currently here in Victoria. My mob is Wonaibon. That's Western New South Wales. I'm originally from a place called Cobar, and I'm currently living in Gippsland in Victoria.
Too deadly. Thanks so much for that, James. What first got you interested in fishing?
Growing up, there was always, we always had rivers a long way away, so I started off yabbying. So me and my mates would go out to a local tank down here in Victoria. They call them dams. We'd go to the local tank, and from there, used to do a bit of yabbying, catch yourself a feed. So I guess I always loved the water. So from starting off catching yabbies with cotton and meat and little scoop net, then upgraded to getting into the water and digging yabbies out by hand. And then it's like, well, no, there's no fish in these dams, so let's go fishing. Our closest dam or closest river was over in Louth or Bourke. So every now and then we used to just jump in the car and hook it over to Louth, spend 3 or 4 days over there and catch a few yellowbelly and come home.
Yellowbelly, yum. All this fish talk is making me very hungry, James. What do you actually like about fishing?
Well, it is. It's getting back to country. No, I have never, ever been a city boy. It's too loud. I can't breathe. There's just everyone's in a rush. I learnt when I went blind that you can't be in a rush. So I had to learn how to be patient. So getting out here fishing, today is a beautiful sunny day. Other days it's been 0 degrees, but it's always nice. It's quiet. It's relaxing. If I catch a fish, yeah, bonus. If I don't, it doesn't matter. No, the fact that I've been able to get out here and just enjoy nature. When you're in a town, when I have to travel to the city, you don't hear nature in the city. You hear trams and trains and buses and cars. It's bloody horrible. Out here, all I hear is the birds, the wind, the occasional fish that's jumping and teasing me. So it's absolutely beautiful out here.
Can I say I want to be there fishing with you, I think? How does blind fishing actually work?
Well, same as normal fishing, with a little bit of extra tweaks. So I wasn't originally blind. I went blind through diabetes. When I did go blind, I had to modify the way I do things. So years ago, I used to be able to see the line, the thread through the lead. So what I do now is I make my own line threaders. So basically, I'll just grab my main tool out. Where is she? I've got in my bag here, my fishing box, or fishing bag, or chair. So what I use is this. A lot of people might go, what is it? Years ago, before we had really good fuses in houses, you used to have to put wire in your fuse box. So when your fuse broke, what would happen is that the fuse wire would snap. So now, with the fuse wire, what I do is cut it to about 4 inches long, then fold it in half like a bobby pin. I put the line in the middle of it like a bobby pin, and then from there I use that as a needle threader. So I can thread all my line right up my fishing rod, and then from there go into my sinker, and I'm not touching lead with my tongue. So because I can't see stuff, I've either got to use my fingers or my tongue. So when it gets to doing the hooks, then I use my tongue. But with lead, I make my own little threaders. So now I don't touch lead.
And do tell me, do you actually go fishing solo, or do you actually have someone support you?
I don't go solo. So from getting from A to B, being blind, all the good fishing spots are, well, in Sale where I'm at. There are a couple of fishing spots there where I could go solo, but all I'm going to do is catch carp. So if I want to go catch decent fish, then I need to have a support worker. So currently in the background, you'll see a Nissan X-Trail and my support worker, Brenton. Wave, Brenton.
Howdy.
Hello.
So it's good when you've got a support worker that enjoys the same things that you do. So he'll get me here, basically set me up, lead me down to the water's edge, and from there, everything else I can do myself. The only thing that I can't do these days is see what type of fish I've got on and the length. So I don't want to go catching a big carp and thinking, oh, geez, that's going to be a nice feed of a fish, that one. So I don't eat carp, but if I get a bass, then if it's too small, I don't want to go, well, I'll keep him because, you know, what's the point of keeping small fish, chucking back in the water, let him breed up for next year?
Do you have a story about the fish that got away, the one that got away, Bruce?
Well, sort of, but not really, because I don't know what it was.
Do tell me what happened.
So I was up at a place called Walhalla, sitting down there fishing just before the bridge near the old train tracks. Nice early morning. And next minute, my rod just started reeling out. And I thought, oh, yeah, I've got it. I've hooked it. It's not going nowhere. And I'm winding this thing in and winding it in. It's still dragging me reel out, dragging me line out. And I get it right near the edge of the bank. And I think I got it hooked up underneath some blackberry bushes. And I'm here trying to drag this thing out. And I've got 20 kilo line on and almost breaking me rod. But end up snapping the hook clean off the end of the line. So I don't know if I got a big trout or if I caught a giant eel or what. But whatever it was, it wasn't coming out. It was not leaving that water. But a good half-hour fight, good fun.
And a good story to match as well, James. And you've been the president of the Sail to Sea Kayaking Group as well. Can you tell us a little bit about kayaking whilst blind?
Yeah, so for a little while I was the chairperson of the Sail to Sea Disability Kayak Challenge. I never ever thought I'd get into kayaking, didn't know how it would work, but I actually was invited down from a lady by the name of Leanne Wishart. So I went down, had a look, and that's where I first sort of mainly met Brenton. So Brenton worked for a company called Gibbsports, and he had the Gibbsports team. All of his team were people with different types of different disabilities, blindness and deaf, hard of hearing. So the Gibbsport team, we were a bit of a menagerie of different disabilities. So most of the people that done the Sail to Sea with a disability were originally amputees. So the Gibbsport team had been going for a while before I showed up. But I went down and I joined up, and from there went for a few practice paddles in a tandem kayak. From there, just fell in love with it.
When you first became blind, you relied on Vision Australia to provide support to you. Can you actually tell us a bit about the services that Vision Australia do provide?
So most of the services that Vision Australia do provide, I guess, are there to help low vision or blind people learn and cope with being blind. So as an example, when I first went blind, I was basically isolated. I didn't know who to talk to, what to do. I was angry at the world. I was in a really bad spot. Really, really depressed. I was just lost. So I rung up Vision and from there spoke to a O&M, so orientation and mobility person. They came out, had a bit of a yarn to me, started showing me things that I could do to help make inside the house a lot easier to navigate. So, for example, I wasn't fully blind at this time. I was only vision impaired. So a little bit of Velcro on the up and down volume button of your TV, or your channel up, channel down, or your power button on your TV of remote. That showed me where the main buttons were. A little bit of Velcro on my washing machine to tell me which was start wash. Little bits of Velcro or little bits of raised dots on my microwave to show me which numbers were 1, 3, 5, reset, start. So things like that, like even what was the difference between shampoo and conditioner? a rubber band around the shampoo, so I knew that was shampoo. So things that everyone takes for granted, I was lacking. I didn't have the skills or the knowledge to be able to tell the difference or to navigate things as simple as that. So I basically had to learn how to crawl again, to then walk again, to then run again. So they helped a lot.
I'm wondering what other modifications have you made to live independently?
I've got a lot of different modifications inside the house. So, for example, Google. Google has been a really, really big game changer. So, you know, hey, Google, what time is it? Hey, Google, tell me what's 1,000 plus 1,000. All these different things at voice command, it tells you what's going on outside. General information that before I wouldn't have known. So I've never been a computer user. To me, computers are like my fishing sinkers. They're, you know, most handy in the water. But when you've got technology and you can learn things, so like reading books and stuff, my iPhone that I've got, I thought to myself, okay, how am I going to use a phone with no buttons? When I was going blind, I was remembering the like ABC, that's on the second key, DEF is on the third key, so on and so forth, to do text messages. Now I can just go, you know, on the phone, go down to dictation, talk out a message, press send, and it goes. Now, inside, my house is basically always set up the same way. So when cleaners come in, they do not move anything. If they do, they know to put whatever they moved back into the same place as what they had when they first got in there. The Ring video doorbell. Sitting out here fishing, if I have somebody come to my door, I can answer my phone, answer the door, say, you know, who is it? If it's a postie, I can just slide down my door, please. And I know that I've got mail there, where if I got home, I wouldn't even know that there was mail there. I'd just walk in, wouldn't feel it, wouldn't know about it, wouldn't see it. So, you know, things like that has helped a great deal. You know, talking microwave, same thing. Without that, wouldn't be able to heat up food. So I've had to use a lot of technology, but in saying that, it has made my life a lot easier.
That's really wonderful to hear. Thank you so much, James. Now let's talk about some of your amazing community work you've done. You've actually served on a number of advisory boards. Is there any advice or particular values that you keep returning to personally for you, Bruz?
Well, I'll go back a little ways and I'll tell a little bit of a story. So back in 2008, I was on dialysis. From there, I was vision impaired and almost fully blind at this time. I had a double transplant, so a kidney and a pancreas. And from there, I'm sitting in my hospital bed, licking my wounds, feeling a bit sorry for myself, and just, I guess, thinking about all the things that I hadn't done, all the things that now I've got the opportunity to do. And one of the things I thought of was, well, somebody's died for me to be here. So now what I've got to do is I've got to pay forward. So from that day, basically my life's been to help other people, be the voice for other people. You know, when people can't speak out for themselves or they're too afraid to make a noise, then I should stand up for them. The only way I can do that is, well, to advocate. So, you know, people might think I whinge a lot, but as someone once said to me, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And there's a lot of things wrong with this world. You know, it's not easy being a person with a disability in a world that does not really cater for disability. So as an example, 20 years ago, there would have been hardly any ramps at all going into a shop or going into a house unless they were specifically put there for somebody who lived there or worked there with a disability. Now, you know, I go into places like, oh, mate, have you ever thought about putting a ramp into this place? It'd be so much easier. It's like, oh, you know, it's going to cost thousands of dollars. It's like, well, okay, yeah. But just think in 10, 15 years to come, when, you know, you're up in your 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and you can't walk as good as you can now, a ramp's going to do you a lot better being in this building now than not being in it 20 years down the track. Or, you know, women with kids with prams. How many times have you seen people struggle trying to get three or four kids in a pram loaded with shopping up a step? No, there's not, ramps are not just there for people with disabilities. They're there for people that need them, that need that little bit of extra help to get up places.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm always advocating. And it's not just for disability, it's for all abilities. And a lot of people don't realise that we all get older and our knees don't work as good as what they used to. So if we can make it easier now for people, in the long run, it's going to benefit all.
Too deadly indeed. Thanks so much, James. Is there anything else you want to mention?
I hope in the next 20-odd years, I'd love for Gippsland to be probably one of the most accessible areas in Victoria. And that way then the rest of Victoria sees how far Gippsland's come along and then wants to copy that. I think that'll be a great achievement. You know, even when I go back up home, I'd love to be able to see that things are more accessible, I don't know, easier.
James, you're pretty amazing to have a yarn with. Thank you.
That was Kerry Lee Harding chatting to James Griffiths. Speak My Language Disability is an initiative funded by the Commonwealth Department of Social Services. It is led by the Ethnic Communities Council of New South Wales and proudly delivered in partnership with SBS. For more episodes of Speak My Language, follow the podcast on the SBS Audio app, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.